Well, this is Mental Health Radio, take it from us. I'm host Sheldon Brown, and I've just been instructed by technician Declan Karen that I've got to be gentle in my introductions.
Leave
otherwise,
me out of this.
leave Declan out of this. Anyway, Take It From Us is brought to you and funded by Wellbeing Trust, and we want to pass on our thanks again to the Trust for renewing its commitment to Mental Health Radio for another 2 years through to 2022. And I want to read something from social media that I picked up during the week. It says, "In life, you will realize there is a role for everyone you meet. Some will test you. Some will use you, some will love you, and some will teach you. But the ones who are truly important are the ones who bring out the best in you. They are the rare and amazing people who remind you why it's worth it." And I'm going to say that our guest today, James King, who is a former co-host and technician here at Take It From Us, is one of those people who I think brought the best out of me, and he was a man who had far more radio experience than I had ever had, and so I learned a great deal about hopefully making quality radio. James has moved to the Waikato. He's living in the Tron, Hamilton, so he's reinforced his support of the Chiefs, and he's seeing a whole lot more of his extended family. And I think, from what I gather, that's been there's great positives around that. So here's James with his observation of his own lockdown, what was good, and perhaps what wasn't quite so good. So welcome, James, to Take It From Us. A bit of a reminiscent moment, James.
Yeah, kia ora, Sheldon. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, well, you made a big contribution to this program, and you know, I've got very fond memories of that. But anyway, how's life in Chiefs country?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's a lovely town, Hamilton. It's nice and flat, and the people are nice, and you know, it's not too far away from Auckland, and I'm closer to family anyway. I've got three sisters who live down here, and so yeah, no, I'm really enjoying the Tron.
You haven't joined the Flat Earth Society down there?
No, but in terms of walking and cycling and things like that, it's quite good, easy to get around. Down here, there isn't as much congestion, obviously, as there is in Auckland.
Yeah, well, are you doing both of those things, walking and cycling, or is that
just a
dream?
Doing a lot of walking, not so much cycling, because I don't have a bicycle, but that's the next thing on my list to get, is a bicycle.
Right, so how long have you been down in Hamilton?
Must be a couple of years now. Yeah, I would think a sort of 2018, I moved here, I think. So I was living in Waikou before that, and it was a suggestion from one of my sisters who lives in Hamilton for me to come down and sort of start afresh down there, and I did, and I haven't looked back, really.
It's interesting that you mention Waikou because I went into the office in Otahuhu, the Ember office in Otahuhu, for the first time, and our tenancy officer was there, and she was telling me all about the shenanigans at the Waikou house, and I think they have decided to pull out of there. There's been quite a few problems with residents, and then the place became empty and they've had squatters in there. Quite a lot of damage has been done, and she was telling me every time they turn the water on there, there is sort of spray that comes up from the pipe that runs into the main house's water supply. So
oh, gosh.
It all sounds like a bit of a disaster. What was it like when you were there?
It was fine. I flattered with three other people. One I didn't see at all. And the other two, I think, moved out a few months after I sort of moved out. So I didn't find it too bad. We behaved ourselves. So I'm quite surprised to hear you say that it's attracted some unwanted attention.
Yeah. Well, I think they're going to pull out of that house and return it to the government's housing organisation, whatever it's now called.
Right.
Yeah, so you've worked your way into the new community in Hamilton, okay?
Yes, I have. I've got involved in musical theatre. I was actually due to perform in one production late last year, but I got a part-time job, so that had to put on the...
James, can I just jump in there? Are you on a cordless or anything?
I am, yeah.
Oh, okay, I was just thinking if you want to perhaps move closer to the bass because it's sort of breaking a little bit this end.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, it's breaking up quite a bit. We couldn't, I couldn't really hear. Were you saying something about a production, James?
It was a production for the...
You're cutting out completely, unfortunately.
Have you got another phone you can jump on that's fixed? Okay. We'll
take a music break. Yep. And we may have to come back on the cell phone, I think.
Okay.
Yep. See you soon.
So we were just talking to James King there, our guest on Take It From Us today, but we're going to take a music break and just see if we can sort out another phone to talk to James on.
Sounds good. This is Phil Collins with One More Night. Everything sorted now, so we will put you back on.
Well, we certainly hope that, Declan. We're going to talk to James on his mobile. Are you there, James?
Yes, I can hear you, Sheldon.
Oh, that's one heck of a lot better.
Beauty.
So,
that's good.
Yeah, I wasn't able to tell whether you were talking about some sort of drama production that you may or may not have got involved in.
Yeah, my sister and niece are involved with musical theatre down here in Hamilton. And so they've, so I've got involved a little bit of, in a little bit of that with front of house, liaison and, helping backstage. and I was actually supposed to perform in their Christmas play, but unfortunately, or fortunately, I got a job and I had to back out of the performance. But I was very close to making myself a star in Hamilton, but to no avail.
Well, was it a big production?
Yeah, I suppose there were 20-odd performers, and of course the backstage sort of volunteers and what have you. So a production probably of 40 or 50 people, I would say.
Oh, well, it would have been a big opportunity to show off your talents.
That's right. But to no avail. Maybe next time.
So you mentioned work. You've been doing a little bit at the casino there.
Yes, I am. I'm at Sky City Casino as a promotions host, so that's been occupying my time up until, of course, we went into lockdown, so I'm not sure when I'll go back, but hopefully it's soon. I'm missing it.
Yeah, well, there have been a lot of people made redundant from the Sky City Casino
yes,
in Auckland.
Right.
And so I'm hoping that that's not going to be repeated down in Hamilton.
Mm. Yeah, me too. So I really love the job. I love the people, and I like dealing with the clients. I really appreciate that people contact. Yeah. I'm very good at being sort of isolated isolating myself. So the opportunity to get out and meet people and in a positive sort of setting is really good for me.
Well, one of the goals today, James, is to talk about your lockdown experience. And before I came into the studio, I read an article which said that COVID-19 is messing with everyone's mental health. What was your experience of COVID-19 and the lockdown in Hamilton?
To be honest, I didn't really need to change my lifestyle too much. I was part of my sister and her husband's bubble, so we kept it pretty tight. I don't think it messed with my mental health. I think it meant that I had to make some adjustments, but I was just focusing on doing what I have been doing for the last couple of years, and that's sort of keeping focused on the here and now.
Well, that's very important, being in the present, not worrying too much about what's going to happen in the future. But before I asked about your lockdown experience, you had actually mentioned isolating.
Yes.
Is that a deliberate sort of strategy or...
Well, it's just something that sort of crept in over the years. The notion of being by yourself. I mean, I enjoy my own company, should I say? And isolating is something that drifts in rather than as a conscious move to isolate. It's sort of something that drifts into me.
So if you're quite used to sort of spending time on your own and you like your own company, having a lockdown for 6 weeks to 2 months, well, I guess you'd had a bit of preparation.
Yeah, I had a bit of preparation. There's a difference between sort of isolating and doing nothing and isolating and being involved in a hobby. I started doing a puzzle, for goodness sake. That's how bored I got. A 1,000-piece puzzle. We did that with the family. It was keeping busy doing positive things is good, especially if you're on your own.
Well, according to your Facebook posts, you're doing a fair bit of creativity, art, something that you were really flourishing in when you were at Toyora. So is that an interest? Your creativity has sort of made a comeback?
Well, it's kind of something I have to do now. There have been periods where I haven't done any artwork. But I just in the last couple of months or so have sort of it's sort of come back. My creativity has sort of come back. I guess probably because I have the space now whilst I'm off work to be creative, and I've got time to be creative, and I've got some, you know, I'm in the right headspace. And I think it's really important. It's as important as getting out and walking or getting out riding your bicycle, taking your medication, all of those sorts of things, getting good sleep. That creative outlet is fundamentally important to any sort of recovery I might have.
Well, judging by how much you're posting of your new works, and most of these are new works, are they?
Yeah, most of them are. I've put a couple up on my Facebook page called James King Art. There's a mixture of older stuff and newer stuff as well. But I've been pretty creative and pretty prolific over the last few months or so. I've got to say I'm pretty happy with the work, actually, and it's occupied me and it's kept me busy. And when I'm painting, I'm in the moment, I'm in the zone, and I'm not thinking too much about past or future, neither of which you can do much about. So I'm just focusing on what's in front of me and going from there.
I mean, it might be fair to say that some of your earlier art was influenced by the anguish of your mental health.
I think that's fair enough to say. I think there's a lot of sort of anger and shouting in my art of a few years ago. I think more recently it's sort of become more subtle and there's more depth to my work. Now I think it's more atmospheric in many ways too. I suppose I've been influenced by the abstract expressionist Sheldon.
Ah, anybody in particular? I don't know any abstract impressionists, but are the people that have influenced you?
Well, people like Jackson Pollock and Howard Hodgkins and people like that are sort of. I've just recently sort of discovered, and I've found that there are similarities in the work I do with them.
So you've been doing a bit of research online and to coincide with this
I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos, Sheldon, on art and art history and so on, and that's been very interesting over the last few weeks to be tapping into that side of YouTube.
What were the signals that you identified to become creative again?
That's an interesting question. It was a need I had to get back into something positive and get back into the art, which is a positive thing for me in terms of a therapeutic quality and obviously sell some work as well, so that's good. I just felt this compulsion to get back and do some art.
Would you like to give us a bit of background as to when this creativity started in your life? I mean, I've mentioned Toi Ora, I think, and I think it was an article in Auckland Today where you were featured with some of your work that was sent to me with the thought that you might be a good person to talk to about creativity and mental health. That's as far back as my memory goes.
Yes, I started doing art. Well, I started painting, should I say. when I was in the Auckland Mental Health Unit Te Whitu Tāwhira back in late 2007 into 2008. That's when I sort of started doing painting, and it was pretty angry stuff. I'd talk about my medications in the paintings. I would talk about how I felt in the paintings, the rage I felt about things, the and all the emotional side of it. But I found it a very good outlet whilst I was in hospital to be doing that, and that's the first time I realised I had any sort of creative sense at all. And then when I went to Toyora, that seemed to inspire me to flourish as an artist.
Well, it's a great thing to hear that an acute psychiatric unit, Te Where Tower in Auckland here, stimulated this interest. Can you give us a bit more detail there? I mean, obviously there were some resources that they...
I had to do something to, because they're long days in hospitals, and they can be quite dull and boring. So I needed to do something to get myself out of my head and out of the poor me sort of syndrome, and get into a more positive frame of mind. And I found just by the encouragement that some people were giving me, some of the occupational therapists were giving me about what I was doing, really encouraged me to keep going. Not that I thought I'd make millions of dollars out of selling art, but it was just in that initial period about me trying to connect with something other than the negative. And painting has always represented something very positive to me.
I can recall there used to be some sort of ferocious symbolic dogs in some of those paintings that looked frightening and perhaps reflected some of the feelings and experiences that you'd had.
Yes, well, I haven't done a dog painting for 5 or 6 years now, but my work in the early days was very influenced by those black dogs, which came from an hallucination I had at the Wellington Mental Health Unit back in 2007, where I was surrounded, in my own mind, I was surrounded by all these dogs sitting or standing in my room at night, and that really spooked me. So, the dogs were a major part of my art. And they're not something that I've put to bed entirely. I do intend to make more dog paintings.
Do you find that, if you had that fear with the dogs, do you find that in some way, when you process that, I'm trying to sort of get at, how do you process, how do you work through that fear when you've got those images?
Well, yes, it's an interesting question. I think I just have to... detach myself a little bit from, there's me the painter and then there's me the person who feels the emotion, and the two connect in a technical sense, I guess. I think that the great thing about art is like writing or broadcasting. Once you've shared it, it actually takes some of the sting out of its tail, takes some of the fear out of it.
Yeah, I get what you mean. Yeah, writing it down, this case, painting.
That's right.
Yeah.
So is that what happened when you were in Te Whetū and you started painting? Some of the fear of your circumstance and the fear of how you were feeling alleviated a bit?
Yeah, to be honest, it was what I was doing. I was painting squares and rectangles of interlinking colours, I was writing a lot on the canvas about my medications and about the number of medications I was on and how many they'd tried on me and how many were successful and how many weren't. So it was very much centred around my illness in those initial that initial period, and didn't sort of branch out and talk about other things until I sort of started going to Toyora.
Well, let's come back after another music break, James, and talk some more about, the change. I think there's been a dramatic change in how you're expressing your emotions today through your art. What have we got, Declan?
Well, I've got one here, actually, going right back into the 80s, Bette Davis Eyes. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I do.
Kim Cairns? You're with 104.6 Planet FM. This is Take It From Us, broadcasting every Tuesday live from 12:30 through to 1:30.
This is Mental Health Radio, Take It From Us, and I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran, and we're talking to a former co-host and technician, James King, a man who taught me quite a lot about broadcasting. Whether it's rubbed off or not, I'm not too sure. But James, we were talking about your newfound enthusiasm for art, and it seems to me, well, I'm wondering how much of your black dog experiences, I suppose, are captured in this new art, because it seems to be more colour, less somberness, much more alive.
Oh, thank you. I was looking last night. I was looking at my art page on Facebook, and there's definitely been a development in terms of the way I approach the canvas or the material that I'm using. There is a strong connection with things that are going on emotionally and politically and culturally, and for me in a personal sense, and for me in a in the sense of a public persona. But to me, I'm a little more subtle in many ways. I'm a little bit more positive in my approach to painting. I mean, emotionally positive. I can see the light and shade and colours more than I used to. I used to see things pretty much black and white. But the various shades and colours of the world now are something that attracts me, and that's probably reflected in the colours that I use now. And also I'm governed by, the price of materials and things like that. So I have to get creative in what paints and what surfaces I paint on and go from there.
What do you put down to that, seeing life in more colour and more shades of colour?
Well, I think it stems from work I did with a psychologist up in Auckland, who really sort of influenced me and in some ways helped me mellow and helped me look at things in a little bit more depth rather than sort of once over lightly all hell breaks loose. He sort of gave me the opportunity to step back and just to experience what life has to offer. Life isn't all bad, even though I still have depression and so on. Life isn't all bad, and life is an awful lot better than it used to be. And the people in my life, are very important to me now, and have sort of gained an importance in my life over the last few years.
Who or what service was that psychologist attached to that you...
Mike Batchelor, who is with the St. Luke's Mental Health Centre in Auckland, I had him for about 18 months, and I found him very helpful indeed, yeah.
So would that be the single most significant factor that's brought you into a greater light of day, if you like?
Yes, I think so. That and a few sort of home truths, like, taking it a day at a time and being rigorous in your approach to life and those sorts of notions as well that I've sort of come to learn over as I've matured. I've matured, Sheldon.
Well, you've done that,
haven't we all?
Way ahead of me, James. But I would say that I've matured, and I think the lockdown has. Well, given me greater confidence of being on my own, and that's been helped by times when I've gone over to Waiheke and I've been there on my own, and I've sort of leaned into aloneness through Waiheke.
I think one of the big things too, as I was saying to a friend yesterday, you can be alone without being lonely. Mm. And I think if you're used to being on your own, you find things to keep your day busy. That's, I think, half the battle.
Yeah, well, I found in lockdown having a bit of a routine where I'd do a little bit of work related to the radio and check out my emails, have a walk, make sure that I ate some decent food, and made some phone calls. So that seemed... tended to be adopting a bit of a routine every day was a helpful.
Yeah, the routine's been interesting because I've never been one for routine really, but I've found since certainly during the lockdown it became more obvious, but to get into that routine of getting up in the morning to take your medication, to make sure you're active during the day, either connecting with family or doing chores around the house and what have you, all those sorts of things together coalesce to make a really positive day when you can do things and you take your medication and you just check them off, the things you need to do. and the things you have to do and sometimes don't want to have to do, but you do.
Well, how would you describe living one day at a time?
It's much more manageable than living in the past or living in the future, for that matter. You know, you take little chunks of it out of life rather than the big chunks, and you know, it's easier to swallow with the little ones.
I think it's very easy too to focus on past events, and to a degree, it puts a bit of a handbrake on you moving forward, because I say to myself, right, well, I dealt with that in the past, I've come through it, I take and learn things out of it, but at some point with myself, I have to make peace with that so I can move forward. But like taking the heartbreak off.
I think that's a fair call too. I mean, I think to myself sometimes, you know, I haven't always acted as a gentleman towards people. I can focus on that and say, terrible me, but I've moved on from that, and I've had to say a lot of sorries in many respects, and how I've had to get honest about where I am at with my mental health issues and emotional and social interactions are sort of governed by the way I'm feeling, and I can't feel positive in the past.
How would you describe your mental health? You've just mentioned that, James. How would you? Where is it?
I think it's very good at the moment. I've got things in front of me to do, like the painting and work. Hopefully, when that gets back into it, I think that those things have been really important.
Yeah, I mean, you described yourself, I think you said that you haven't always been a gentleman to people.
Hands up to that one.
But, you know, have you been influenced by, I guess, the political environment where we have been asked to be stay safe and be kind to each other, and even the new leader of the National Party is talking about being nice to people? I mean, has that had an influence?
Yes, I think so. I listened to the Prime Minister say be kind to one another, and I thought, gosh, you know, it's an interesting to hear a politician say something like that, and I think it's so important. You know, I watched and marvelled at my sister, Helena, who, you know, was looking after the elderly gentleman next door, going shopping for him and so on. You know, people didn't do that sort of thing pre-COVID-19, and people are doing that now. So it's, in many ways, it's been an inspiration for good change.
Well, perhaps you're being kind to the appreciators of your art, and that it's not quite as dark and as sharp as it was in those early days.
I think, yes, and I think my work in the early days shouted at people. You know, there were lots of exclamation marks and swearing and cursing and carrying on in my art, which was good for the time because that really was reflecting how I felt. I just think the art now is more subtle in many ways, is more colourful in many ways, says more and leaves more room for the viewer to make their own interpretations about what's being said in the art, which is as important as the way the artist sees it.
How has that influenced the success or the response to this art that you're exhibiting on social media?
Well, I've had comments like on the art page. I've had comments like, you know, these are beautiful works, and although I had one guy who messaged me and said that my art was dreadful, and I thought to myself, that's the first time anybody's ever said that to me, I could have focused on that and got really upset about it, but I just thought to myself, he's entitled to his opinion and so on, but so it's not all positive interactions based on my art, but it seems to connect a lot more. And I think the art seems to connect a lot more to women now. And I think that's probably because of the sensitivity with which I approach my art practice now.
Yeah. Well, and I think possibly there's a lot of pastel shades and colour and kindness, I think, reflected in this art that you're displaying. So,
thank you.
I think maybe it appeals to the fairer sex.
Yeah, it seems that there's more of an even split now between men that buy my work and women. So, and that's quite good. I enjoy that. And people pick up on different aspects of the work that sometimes I haven't thought about, and you know, so it's interesting. I love talking about art. Love watching art documentaries. You know, painting's in my blood now. From a position of never painting anything, even at school, to this sort of situation is mind blowing, really.
Well, I was going to say, does it surprise you how far you've come from those early days with the occupational therapist at Te Whetū Tāwhara?
Yes, yeah, I have come a long way. And you know, the idea that that other human beings connect with something I do to the extent where they want to look at it, and sometimes want to look at it every day. And pay me for the privilege is really humbling. I'm just constantly astounded at the idea that someone's interested in what I've got to say about me, the world, and you know, as I say, that's really humbling.
Well, there's quite a bit of your art I shouldn't say exhibited. It's hanging in my apartment, and as you know, I've had it's thousands of people through that apartment via Airbnb, and there's been a lot of admiration, particularly of the work that features of yours in that guest room. So
yes, well, people like you, Sheldon, and I thank you. For buying my art and people like yourself who do that. There are a couple of other people, three or four other people who buy my art, you know, quite regularly. And you know, it's, as I say, it's something I'm very thankful for, and I don't take for granted. And that someone's willing to pay good money, you know, legal tender, to buy my stuff is... told me that a few years ago, I would have thought you were crazy.
But doesn't that also reinforce one's self-worth in that you know that you're putting out something that not only are you enjoying, but other people enjoy enough to want to buy as well? I think that's a really strong positive thing as well.
Yeah, I think so. I initially started painting without any history or without any notion or knowledge about art in a commercial sense, or in an emotional sense for that matter. So to start from that 10 years ago, 13 years ago, to where I'm at now is, I'm still doing it for me, and I'm still doing it because it's cathartic to me, but if I can share that with other people and other people connect with that, so much the better.
But isn't it interesting too how in our past, when we look at it, no matter what we go through, that's a stepping stone to where we are. So to go through the dark side of painting was to express how you were feeling at that time, and now you've been able to move through that and bringing out those lighter portions in your painting. And it's all, I think, important and connected, because would you be where you are now if you hadn't gone through that?
Well, that's right. Would I be in Hamilton? Would I be working at the casino? Would I be, you know, painting for people? Probably not if I'd continued to go down the track that I was going down until I had my mental breakdown in 2007. I would probably be in an entirely different situation. And I can look at it and say, well, I'm 45 this year. I haven't got a full-time job. I don't own my own home. I don't have children. I don't have a wife. I don't have, you know, I can focus on what I don't have. But then when I focus on what I do have, I've got art in my life. I've got a nice little part-time job. I've got friends around me who care about me, and I've got family close. When I start doing that in the pros and cons column, I find that I'm ahead.
And what price do you put on that piece? You know, people say to me, yeah, go out and work full time and that, and I go, yeah, but if a lot of people are going, they say, to a job they don't like. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's right. And I enjoy my job, and I enjoy the painting, and I enjoy being around friends and family, you know, I don't isolate as I used to go back to that isolation. I don't isolate like I used to. I don't take people for granted, and you know, I've got a really tight team.
I think
not
the
a team of 5 million, but a team around me.
The thing too is that when you were doing something that you were passionate about, I'm just reading a book at the moment actually by Barbara and Alan Pierce called The Answer. And it says, you know, when you're doing something you're really passionate about, it doesn't become a job anymore. And that's a good point. You know, at the end of the day, so many people are going to a job to get paid, but are they really enjoying it? And you're passionate about what you're doing. And I think if you can find that in life, you're halfway there.
Yeah, I think so. If you've got a passion, doesn't matter what it is, if you've got a passion, it adds to the zest that life has to offer. And I still struggle at times. I still struggle with the voices and what have you. But I've got a pretty good team around me now, and it feels like I'm more supported.
Brilliant. Well, let's take another music break, James, and just hang on there. What have we got, Declan?
Oh, I'm taking you back to the 80s today because I'm just feeling really nostalgic. Eyes Without a Face, Billy Idol, do you remember?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, gosh, here you go. You was taken from us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting here every Tuesday, 12:30 through to 1:30 live. And, of course, we're on 104.6 Planet FM. Billy Idol, Eyes Without a Face. Bit your choice. Nice.
Well, this is Mental Health Radio. Take it from us. That was Billy Idol, as Declan was saying. And we're talking today to James King, who was co-host and technician here at Take It From Us for many years. James, it might be a bit bold of me to say it's a bit of a coincidence that Declan chose that track, Eyes Without a Face. That might have been an apt description of some of your early work, do you think?
Yes, I suppose that there are similarities there, but I sort of moved away from the figurative sort of, faces and dogs and that sort of thing. I moved away from that because I wanted to have sort of more ambiguity in the work. I wanted to allow people to have more of an opportunity to interpret what they were seeing. And how emotions can be represented by colours, textures, form, all of those sort of context, all of those sorts of things.
So you've mentioned a Facebook page, James King Art. People can see your work displayed there?
Yes, they can see my work on James King Art. I've got a couple of videos, a few videos of my work and of my first solo exhibition called Love Letter Bombs. There's a nice piece of video that goes along with that.
So this is a more recent exhibition held in the Waikato?
No. I was in a group show last year or the year before last down here in Hamilton, but what I've got loaded on is a sort of an old... is sort of an old video of my work. I think there's stuff on YouTube as well, some artist talks I've given and that kind of thing.
And you've also got your own personal Facebook page where you're exhibiting some of this latest work.
Yeah, that's James King Art. I also put it through my normal Facebook account. And the people have connected with it. It's just been really gratifying to have people engage with the work and enjoy it or not enjoy it, but connect with it on a really fundamentally visceral level. It doesn't have to be, deep and meaningful, so long as the colours are right and the textures are right and those sorts of things are right, then it should work
positively
for people.
What's the next step?
I don't know. The Tate Modern, maybe? The Metropolitan Museum in New York? I don't know.
You were painting with a man at Toyora who had his own agent in New York, so that's not as far-fetched as...
No. Well, that's true. I don't know. I don't know what's next. I don't know how to sort of move further into the art field. And maybe I'm just happy one day at a time doing what I'm doing at the moment and not being too taxing for me, and there's something that's quite manageable.
Well, it sounds like a win-win. I hope that you're getting some benefit in your emotional health as well.
Oh, definitely. I think the painting is more about the emotional well-being than it is about the financial well-being. The financial stuff is good, but it's not the primary motivation for what I do.
Yeah, secondary reward. That's always a good way to do it too. Yeah, doing it for the right reasons then. Yep.
Well, the wonderful thing to me is that you sound well, emotionally, well, mature, to use your word.
Relaxed.
So that's great.
Yeah, relaxed, aren't you? And that's the way it should. You know, so you never know what opportunities around the next bend. I mean, you could have somebody from New York walk into your studio for all you know and say, hey, you know.
Right.
That's right.
Let's hope that happens. Well, thank you, James. We've just got a couple of community notices, so thank you for your time. And I'll keep a lookout on Facebook at those creations that are coming through.
Yeah, great having you on board, James. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Declan.
No worries. We'll catch you, eh?
Bye-bye.
So, Hearts and Minds on the North Shore are running mental wellbeing support for anybody who's looking for an online support group or even phone counselling with qualified counsellors. Get in touch with Hearts and Minds at learning@heartsandminds.org.nz. That's their email, or give them a call on 021 706 393. And the Mental Health Foundation is offering grants. They have a total of $20,000 worth of funding, which has been sort of informed during COVID-19. This is called the Fiora Fitiora Fund. And what I suggest you do is just get in touch with the Mental Health Foundation at www.mentalhealth.org.nz, or you can email a Fitiora Fund at mentalhealth.org.nz, and that email will get you through to a Gina Giordani. So they are the two major things that we have to tell our listeners about today. I think there's no doubt that there's no gain without pain, and I'd say that our guest James has had his fair share of pain, but I think he is enjoying considerable gains as well, and that's really heartening. So how are we doing? We're getting close.
Oh, I'm just sitting here reflecting, actually, just thinking about, you know, how you find your new normal. You just sort of move on in life, and things sort of seem to, most of the time, things just click into place, and you look back and wonder what all the fuss was about.
Well, I think living in the now is certainly one way to allow things to click into place. I've got another thing from social media here, which I'd like to read. I'll have to be quick. Oh, well.
You'll have to leave that for next week.
Leave that for next
How's
week.
That?
Okay, we'll make it next week then. Well, all thank you for listening. This is Take It From Us on Planet FM 104.6.
Catch you next week. Have a good one.